Dictionaries aren't terribly exciting things. They are useful, but maybe not a riveting sort of thing we might turn to. But one thing I find quite interesting from time to time is hearing what new words are coming about. And the Oxford English Dictionary each year has a little bit of a vote, both amongst experts and linguists and among the general public, as to what should be the word of the year. Sometimes they're quite interesting, sometimes they're just weird. Last year, 2023, no, 2 years ago, the word of the year was riz. Most adults have not the foggiest idea what that is. You'll have to ask a teenager, maybe they will know what that is. Some have been more interesting and sort of shown developments that have happened in that year that haven't been before, if you know what I mean. So all the way back in 2005, the word podcast was word of the year because it was quite a new thing to be done and people started to use the word. Or in 2013, the word selfie became word of the year. These things that then sort of became part of life in our country and beyond. 2021, the word vax was the word of the year in all the ways it was used. Well, in 2024, the year just passed, winning by 37,000 votes amongst the general public and linguistic experts and the right, the word of the year was voted to be brain rot. Brain rot. And they've defined it like this: the supposed deterioration of a person's mental and intellectual abilities as a result of overconsumption of trivial, unchallenging material. Brain rot. People say, the smarter your phone gets, the stupider you get. Your phone is there, and you're consuming more and more of it all the time. And we're consuming more and more stuff that's pretty low quality. It wasn't very interesting, and it wasn't very entertaining either, but we're just a bit obsessed by it. And we're consuming all of this trivial, unchallenging stuff. Scrolling along through our phone, reading post after post, playing a daft little game, doing this and that. And it's just, in many ways, mind-numbing. Didn't really excite us at all. We didn't really, looking back, think it was terribly interesting. We just couldn't stop scrolling on through the social media or playing the game or whatever it might be. Although it doesn't just have to be phones and things like that. There could be all kinds of ways. We're just swamping our minds with things that aren't very important. Things that just don't matter at all. How are we using our minds? That's what we're going to think a little bit about this morning. But it doesn't necessarily either have to be a modern phrase. They think the use of the word brain rot has massively increased over 2024. But the word was first used in 1854. In 1854, really quite sort of Victorian times, Britain, places around, had a big problem with potatoes. It was the potato famine, potato rot. And Henry David Thoreau wrote a book in which he was trying to look at the way that thinking in the nation of Britain had become devalued. And he said this: while England endeavours to cure potato rot, nothing is done to stop brain rot, which is far more widespread among the public and far more fatal. So far before smartphones or anything like that were invented, there was a Victorian worrying of how people, their brains were rotting and they just weren't thinking properly about things. Lots of empty nonsense and the rest. Well, if word of the year last year was brain rot, as 2025 then begins, what do we want to do? What do we want to do about it? Maybe we looked honestly at ourselves. I thought, maybe I have been consuming lots of trivial stuff. It hasn't been very interesting or relaxing or entertaining particularly. What are we meant to do? Well, we had Roop visit us about a month or so ago, maybe a time before, and he visited and said, one midweek meeting, we had a lovely time with him. And yeah, well, lots of the teenagers were there for that as well, actually. And Roop said, what we need to do more is rather than do this, do this. is found rather than have your phone and endlessly scrolling on, flicking at things, pick up a Bible instead and start doing this. Use your finger for something else. Rather than that mind-numbing scrolling,
except that was a tongue twister,
or those just boring games that are just, you know, just something to fiddle with, why not turn? Turn the pages of the Bible and discover something in it, rather than brain rot. That verse we read, should we read it together? Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what that is, that good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. And we're going to be thinking a little bit more about that this morning. The renewing of our mind, what it means to be transformed as we think about Christ. We're going to begin 2025 thinking about this theme that came from that verse that we just heard read, Romans chapter 12, verse 2. Be good to have a Bible, be ready with that finger to turn pages and discover more in God's word, where we read, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. 2025, being transformed by the renewing of your mind. Well, let's just jump straight in with a question. Why does it need renewing? What needs making new about our minds? Well, we're created, of course. We're created perfectly by God. Mind, body, soul. We're mostly thinking about the inside of us today, less about our bodies, more about our minds, how exactly that fits with our soul, our heart. We might use those kind of words to talk about the heart, our affections, the mind, our thoughts, the soul, our being. Well, we're linking those things together, really, to think about our inner self, inside what we're thinking about, what we're feeling, what we're desiring, and so on. Those things, of course, created by God perfectly. Good things from God. Maybe we should acknowledge, just as we have different bodies given by God, with different heights, with different physical abilities and things like that, we have different mental abilities too. We've got different minds, both in different ways that we use them and things like that too. Of course, all of those things affected by the fall. Our minds too, not just our bodies, it's not just that we grow old, it's not just that we hurt ourselves, we injure ourselves and things like that, but our minds have been affected by the fall. And we could look at a couple of verses. We'll flick through maybe five just quickly. 2 Corinthians to start with, in chapter 4, verse 3. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 3. Paul says, even if our gospel is veiled, it's veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ should shine on them. Satan has blinded the minds of unbelievers. They might not physically look any different, but inside, their mind is blind. They do not believe. Or we could head on to a book a tiny bit later, to Colossians, a couple of books on, another one of Paul's letters, Colossians chapter 1 and verse 21. And you who were once alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now he's reconciled. We were enemies of God in our mind, Paul says. That's where the battlefield was. In our minds, we hated God. And we were enemies because of our wicked works. In many ways, we preferred them to God. And so we were enemies of God in our minds because of those things. Turn back one book with your finger to Philippians chapter 3 and verse 19. He's talking about the enemies of Christ. Carries on in verse 19. Whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, whose glory is their shame, whose mind is set on earthly things. So they only think of earthly things. And so he talks about them being destructive and shameful and disobedient in their ways. They're only thinking about earthly things. the instant pleasures, the instant gratification of the things they want, with never a consequence for anyone else, never a consequence for God, just thinking. With blinkers on, you might think of like a horse being ridden along. Just thinking about one narrow little thing. That's all. That all that popped into their head. Or head on a few more pages to the little book of Titus. Book of Titus. For their rights to a young man in Titus chapter 1 and verse 15 says, to the pure, all things are pure, but to those who are defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. Even in their mind and conscience are defiled. Corrupted could be the word there. Their mind and conscience. Corrupted, twisted would be the word in a nutshell. They're not thinking straight. They're not thinking rightly about things. Everything's twisted. All of their moral decisions aren't right because they're not thinking straight. It's a little bit like the book of Proverbs, that would be, where it describes the fool who says there is no God, and then the way the fool does all sorts of things as a consequence of it. The book of Proverbs isn't saying that they're stupid. It isn't saying they're complete idiots and don't know 2 + 2 and the rest of it. But it's saying that when it comes to making logical, moral choices, it's all twisted. That's the problem. Or one more verse for now. Back in Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. And Paul says, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a depraved or a debased mind to do the things which should not be done. They have a depraved mind. So it's not thinking of God. And so it can do all sorts of things, awful things, that somehow in their mind they've made right, the right thing to do. They're not thinking of God. They've headed so far away from him that their mind is now just depraved. That's why our minds need renewing. Now, we're not saying, of course, that non-Christians can't do anything. Non-Christians can be very smart and clever. You could be. Well, I'm here this morning, not really a Christian, but you have your academic successes, a qualification to your name, a good job you hold down. Non-Christians still have fantastic God-given minds. They can make the most incredible inventions. They can study and discover and reason. They can cure diseases. They can make the most incredible works of art or works of fiction or whatever it might be. Now, Christians could do 101 fantastic things with the very capable minds that God has given them. But even in doing those things, they have no thought of the God who gave them those abilities, do they? They have, at the very least, a massive blind spot. Yes, there may be a non-Christian who's working right now, working out how to cure cancer. Maybe they're making great progress on it. Maybe they are. Maybe they have amazing abilities. Maybe they have great capacity in their mind. But they could have a complete blind spot, a gap in their thinking, that they don't think about God. And that could be something quite deliberate. They don't want to think about God. They don't want to have that knowledge of God. Any thought of him in their mind, they drive it away. A deliberate thought. They don't want God in their thinking. Sometimes we notice quite a deliberate thing that people do that, don't they? Maybe sometimes we even notice it at Christmas. Sometimes quite deliberate efforts people make to make Christmas nothing about Christ. Very consciously shoving him out of their mind. So they can just think about earthly things. They do something that's something quite obvious in that. They don't want anything to do it, and so on. Sometimes it can be quite bizarre, as we noticed in these verses, we as non-Christians are enemies in our minds towards God. And again, we notice that in people who are adamant atheists, non-Christians and the like of it. It's not just they don't want to think about God. They hate any thought about God. They're very angry sometimes with the God they don't believe in, which doesn't make any sense. If they were really being consistent, they should not be angry, because they don't believe that this person exists. But they're terribly angry and worked up about the God they claim they don't believe in. They're enemies in their minds. They're angry with him, hostile towards him. And as well, it's a deliberate thing, it's an obvious thing, it's a choice they've made too, but we're also told it's also something subconscious too. Satan blinds the minds of unbelievers. There's lots of factors at work in that. That's why we need our minds renewed. But the wonderful thing is of how we can be transformed then by Christ and how he can change us. We looked at one of these verses, strangely, last week in Luke chapter 24, a passage about the resurrection. We were looking at it at Christmas. If you were there, you might remember. And we were talking about the people on the road to Emmaus and how they were puzzled about all of these things. The disciples were the same later on. And right at the end of Luke's gospel, in Luke 24, verse 45, it says this, "And Jesus opened their mind that they might understand the scriptures." And that's what Jesus does. Jesus opens minds. To those who are completely hostile, complete enemies of God, didn't want any thought, were driving any thought of him out, Jesus opens minds. Opens minds to think of God where they never thought before. He removes the blindness that Satan has put in front of their eyes. Before they were enemies in their minds, now he reconciles them and makes peace with God. Before they only thought of earthly things, now they begin to think of eternity and what happens when they die and how to be right with God. And they think about wanting to go to heaven. Thoughts that never popped into their head before, because Jesus opens minds. That's a hope of ours, isn't it? As 2025 begins, and we prayed earlier, didn't we, for those we know and love who are not Christians. Maybe as another Christmas has gone past and another year has come to an end, we're a little bit sad in our minds. Or as we think of a brother or a sister or a son or a daughter or a mum or a dad or an uncle or an aunt or a grandson or grandchild, on we go. And still in that last year, there was no sign that they had any interest in Jesus at all. And another year's gone by. And it saddens us as the year comes to a close. Oh, I hoped. I really did hope. They would come to faith. We believe in Jesus who opens minds. That's our confidence as a new year begins. As we bring those loved ones again to God in prayer, Jesus would open minds. They might be angry and hostile. They may be disinterested. They may be sometimes a bit unkind to us because we're Christians and the rest of it. We pray that God would open mind. And he does. He did it to us. He changed our mind. He opened our heart, didn't he? That's our prayer, isn't it? That's our hope. That's our trust. In Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 10, we read this. So a mention of an Old Testament prophecy. It says, "For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord. I will put my laws in their mind and write them on their hearts. I will be their God and they will be my people. None of them will need to teach his neighbour and none his brother, saying, 'Know the Lord,' for they will all know me, from the least to the greatest." God gives a new heart, a new mind, so they might know God. He writes his laws on their hearts. We, who are Christians, were changed by Jesus. No, nothing in and of ourselves, no superior knowledge, no superior mind. Just that Jesus opened it and changed us. So we have been transformed by Christ, if we're Christians. If we look forward then to the year ahead, how are we going to use our mind in 2025? We've been reading our text, if you like, for the day is there in Romans chapter 12, verse 2. "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." It's an ongoing thing, isn't it? An ongoing thing. Yes, Christ has opened our mind. And yes, we've been given a new heart. And yes, Christ is at work in us. But we want to be being transformed by the renewing of our mind, for this year ahead, 2025, to be more transformed than we were in the last year. To be renewed a bit more than we have been so far in our Christian lives. That's what we want, to be being transformed. And how does that happen? Well, as we said with the children, maybe doing a little less of this, and maybe a bit more of this. A little less scrolling, a little more page turn. Well, let's just think for a moment. We have our mind. A mind that we need for lots of things, don't we? We use our minds for work. In our employment, maybe paid employment, we're given tasks to do, whatever shape or form that may be in your workplace. You're given things to do and you use your mind as you sit down in front of a class or sit down in front of a computer or in front of a machine or whatever it is. We use our minds for work. Those who are at school, university, you use your mind. You sit down in a classroom and someone may endeavour to impart some wisdom to knowledge to you. And you're going to use your mind to think about those facts and that information, those skills that you're being taught. Maybe you're working at home. And again, you're going to use your mind in doing the things that are needed to look after the house, to provide for the family, and all these different things. We use our mind in all of those ways as we do things with our hands, do things with our minds. And we use our mind too to have a bit of downtime and rest. After all the work, sometimes our minds are a little bit tired. Not just our bodies that are tired, but our minds are tired, perhaps when we come in from work. And we want to watch a bit of TV, or read a bit of fiction, or have a hobby, or play some sport, or something like that. And how much time do we have to think about God? As we think about the last year, and as we think about the year ahead, what push of our mind do we want to devote to thinking about God? Now, we could think about that in terms of the time. We might think of our quiet time and our time at church and things like that. Yes, those are very important. We'll look a bit more at that in a minute. But there's also the need to bring God into all those other things too in our lives, isn't there? To be bringing God into our workplace, into our school and things like that too. Remember how the Old Testament people of God were told, parents to tell their children, talk about these things as you walk along the road, as you sit around the table. That can be a great opportunity too. You sit around the dinner table at the end of a day and you ask people about their work, ask people about school and things like that. And bring God into that. Is there anything that was missed out at school that should have been said about that? Or was there a situation you were facing at work, in the locker room, or, you know, in the whatever? And what would God think about that? What can we learn about those things? Bringing God into the whole of those things that are happening in the day. But what about, as we said, brain rot? There's things we need to do with our mind. As we said, we need it for work, we use it for rest, we use it for God. Are we meant to have some of our mind for wasting? In the meaningless, in the trivial. And that may not be quite the same thing as the resting and relaxing, is it? There may be something we do. No, I'm tired out. I want to do this. Great. Perfectly makes sense. But what about the time we waste? Our mind that we're wasting on things that really don't matter, and it really didn't relax us at all either. It wasn't rest, and it wasn't work. It was just rubbish. Whatever it was that we were occupying ourselves with. Insane. What about that bit of our mind we use for sinning? It shouldn't be, should it? But most sins begin in the mind. We're going to look a little bit more about that this evening and think of the story of David. Most sins begin in the mind. It's in our mind that we brood over that thing someone said to us and we carry on being angry and resentful. It's in the mind, isn't it? is in the mind we're just musing about money and what we're going to spend it on. It's our mind we're using for greed. It's our mind we're using to be lustful. It's our mind we're using to be angry, or whatever it might be. And it shouldn't be, should it? We want to be transformed by the renewing of our mind. That's what we used to use our mind for. But what about now? We still do it, even as Christians, don't we? No one knows the things that go on in here. But we want our mind to be transformed. And there's a conflict in that, isn't it? In Romans chapter 7, back a page or two, even in Romans 12. Romans 7 and in verse 23, Paul says, "I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members." Paul says, there's a war in my mind. I want to think about Christ. I want to live for Christ. I delight in the law of God, he says in the previous verse. And then there's this war because my body, the rest of me, the old person, still wants to be angry and lustful and greedy and coveting and the rest of it. That's what my old way of life was. And so there's a bit of conflict there in our mind too. But we've been made new. And sometimes we need to recognise, no, that's old. As a new year begins, maybe it's time to throw out some old ways. Old ways we got in the habit of thinking about money or whatever it might be. Throw those things out. A new year, a new start. Getting rid of some of those old things because we are new. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 20. "You have not so learned Christ, if indeed you've heard of him, been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus. You put off concerning the former conduct the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness." You're new. So set your mind on things above. That's what we read in Colossians, a well-known verse, Colossians chapter 3 and verse 2. "If then you were raised with Christ, seek the things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth." So we're thinking about where Christ is. We're thinking about heaven. We're thinking about Jesus' return and things like that. We're thinking about where Christ is and who Christ is. We're thinking about what we should do. We're thinking about his example. We're thinking about his teaching, his help that he can give us. We set our minds on things above. We think about Christ. We get rid of those old things that we don't want to be thinking like that anymore. And instead, recognize that we're a new person. And so as we think of using our mind, it is a little bit thinking about how we're going to use our time. 24 hours a day, 7 days in the week, that gives you 168 hours. Is that right? I think it's right. Anyway, and then how are you going to divide that up? Well, for most of us, maybe. If you sleep 8 hours a night, that's a third of your week gone. Well, it's probably necessary to do something like that, sleeping 8 hours a night, something like that. For those who are perhaps in paid employment, working your average 9 to 5, that's another third gone. 9 to 5 job, that's 8 hours work a day. Maybe something like that crops up over and above that. So we've made that times by 7 all the same, even though you're not really going to work 7 days. But maybe you have to do a bit more than that. Maybe you've got to do some in the evenings too. Maybe at school the hours are shorter than that, but you've got homework, you've got revision, things like that. Maybe your school does it, you know, your workplace does expect you to do things out. You know, it can creep up, can't it? Anyway, you just work it out for yourself. You can have a little review, perhaps a little over this week ahead. Where does all the time go? Maybe try and keep a little bit of account. Think about how you're using your mind, how you're using your time. What about the rest? Well, you might have to spend some time travelling. You might have other tasks you've got to do which don't really come into what you'd call your work, whatever it might be. You might have time you set aside for leisure and things like that. Who knows? Maybe as you review your average week, maybe there's some time you just have no idea where it went. Maybe there was time, if you look back and think, actually, I just wasted that. It wasn't rest. It wasn't work. It was just nothing. It was just idleness. It was just laziness, maybe. How are we going to use our time for Christ? And if the only time you think about God in the week, that's that tiny little sliver at the top, is if you only come to church 1 hour a week and that's the only time you're going to think about God in the week, that's it. Out of 168 hours in the week, have you given one to God? Maybe as we think, as the new year begins, how do we want that to look? How do we want those things to shape up our time? How are we using those things that God has given us? Well, that was just a guess. You could work it out for yourself. What are we using our minds for? Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Maybe it might be wise to look back over 2024. Maybe it'd be good to look at the year ahead and think of your priorities. Where do you want the time to go? How do you want to use your mind? Setting your mind on things above. How much of a priority is it going to be? Those different things. And setting aside time for those very things. Those things concerning God. Okay, you've got to do some work. You've got to have some sleep. You've got to cook the dinner. You know, you've got to do all these things. Okay. What about the time you're going to spend, the mind you're going to use? Are you going to set aside time to pray? Put the phone down. So you're not flicking it anymore. No distractions, just for some time to pray. Are you going to think about the time you want to devote to read God's word? Less of that, more of this. Thinking about what would God speak to you before you go to work, before you cook the dinner, before you go to bed, whatever it might be, to think about God in those things. What about the time to worship? A time to remember. Do you think about communion in that as Christians? A time to listen, a time to learn. How much of a priority is that going to be in 2025? To think about those opportunities that we have together as a church. Opportunities to encourage each other, to enjoy fellowship, to serve in God's kingdom. Set your mind on things above. And all those things we've got to do. Time, we might not have an awful lot of choice about. And how we're spending a large part of our day. What about the time that's left? How much time are we wasting? How much time are we thinking of God? Transformed by the renewing of our mind. As we do that, God's changing us, isn't he? How has God changed us? We look back over this last year. How have you grown over the year? What have you learned of God? How have you been transformed in the year ahead? And maybe you see some glaring things. Maybe you think, actually, I really want those to be changed in the future. To bring them to God. To ask for his help. Saying, God, as 2025 begins, transform me. Renew my mind. Help me learn more of Christ. Help me become more like him. Help me set my mind on things above. Help me in 2025 for your word to be more important than the stuff on social media. Help me to think in 2025 that praying to you and listening to you is more important than that daft game. Worshipping you and remembering your death is more important than that daft thing on the telly. How are we going to use our mind in the year ahead? Christ, he's given us this mind. He's opened our eyes to see Jesus. And he's changing us. By the end of 2025, if he doesn't return, or we don't go to meet him, we're going to be a year further on. Are we a year more ready for heaven? As the days pass, each day, a day closer to the time when we'll be with Jesus in heaven. Minds renewed, transformed by that work of Jesus. And we look forward to that time when they finally finish it there in heaven. And we pray that he might do more of it, his work in us, right now and in the year ahead. Let's leave it there, and we're going to sing our last hymn, one that sort of picks up those same sort of things of using our abilities. It's hymn number 14, if you want it in the hymn book, up here on the screen. I'll praise my Maker while I've breath, and when my voice is lost in death, praise shall employ my nobler powers.